Hi, this is Pastor Chris, and welcome to Strength for Today from Living Hope Baptist Church in Geneva, New York. Today is Friday, April 17th, 2020. Of my grandparents, I only had the privilege of knowing my mother's mother. She lived into her 90s and was an integral part of our family. She was part of every holiday and every birthday celebration, and I loved my grandmother. My earliest memories of her come from the sleepovers which my brother and I would spend at her house. Her house was in Renton, Washington, perched on a hill overlooking the southern end of Lake Washington. It was a bit of a drive to get there from our house, but as I suppose, as the crows flies, it wasn't that far. The problem was that you could only cross the bridge to the mainland from the north part of our island, and then we lived almost all the way down by the southern point of the island. So it took almost an hour to get there, but that just built the excitement. And my brother and I, we never minded, because a sleepover at grandmother's was always a glorious adventure. Her neighborhood wasn't anything like ours. Our neighborhood was all new. The trees were young, and here and there houses were being built. But grandmother's was all old, ancient, like her. Of course, you know how that is. Anyone over the age of 40 seems ancient to a little kid. But the neighborhood was old, at least by Seattle standards. To get there, we'd follow a curvy two-lane road around the shores of the lake until we'd reach the turn that led up her hill. This was a steep hill, and I used to wonder whether our car would make it up to the top. I suppose I shouldn't have wondered. We did have a 65 Mustang, and I think it was pretty powerful. But the way Dad drove it, well, he kind of babied it, never pushing it. So we creep up that hill until we arrived at the right turn that led us onto a narrow, bush-lined gravel road, Grandmother's Road. If my memory serves me right, this lane only had houses on the one side, all the ones looking over the lake. And of the five or six it included, I only knew the first three. Seated in the tiny seat of that Mustang, my brother and I would strain forward to look out the windows. And there, down below the carport, almost hidden by cherry trees and a rhododendron bush, we would see, oh, there was Sam and Edna's house. And over there, its roof just peeking up over the junipers, was Florina and Ella's house. These folks, just like my grandmother, were impossibly old. We liked them because they gave us cookies and candies and showed us fun things around their houses, and of course because they were grandmother's friends. A trip to grandmother's was a trip to Florina and Ella's and to Sam and Edna's to hear stories about some great war that Sam had fought in and to see black and white photos of his battleships or to visit with the Spinster sisters and then sip their stale 7-Up, eat the cookies, and listen to gossip from the secretarial pole at Boeing. But there, between those two houses, was my grandmother's. Well, you couldn't actually see the house from the lane. The only way you knew you were there was to see the mailbox and then turn right into the narrow gap between the junipers. This led you down a steep incline to something my parents called a carport. A carport was something like a garage, like the one we had, but it only had space for one car. There was no storage area in it, and actually no walls, really. It was just sort of a roof suspended over a slab of concrete by some metal poles. And I really couldn't understand the point of it, other than, I suppose, it would keep some of the rain off the car. And there was a car in this carport, a wide, long, brownish metal and chrome contraption with a bulbous cabin and big fins in the back. I'd never seen that car actually move, but I overheard Mom and Dad talking about it sometimes. It was something my grandfather had left there before he died, apparently, and after the funeral, whatever that was, Grandmother had decided to keep it, saying that she needed to learn now to drive. Which all sounded weird to me because, like I said, she was ancient. I thought all ancient people already knew how to drive. So Mom said something about trips to the grocery store, and Dad said something about her going on Sunday afternoon drives to look at gardens with her friends. And then they started talking about phone books. You don't see many phone books around these days. But in those days, everybody had them. They kept those phone books by their phone. In the house, we had a whole bunch of them. One for the island, one for Seattle, one for Bellevue, and then big yellow page phone books that listed all the businesses in those areas. The latter were kind of useful if you had nothing else to read when you were eating your breakfast cereal, because they did have ads and pictures and things you could look at. But most of the phone books at my grandmother's weren't lying by the phone in the kitchen. They were stacked on the front bench of that big brown sedan. You see, my grandmother was pretty stinking short. I didn't realize it at the time, but I guess at 4'8", she was a real shorty, and she had real trouble seeing over the dashboard. So when she started learning to drive, she'd stack up those yellow pages and clamber up onto them and buckle in. I didn't ride with her then because, well, she wasn't, as she said, confident. But later, when I did, I saw that driving was a real challenge for her. For her, going out in that car was like going out to fly an airplane. 20 minutes before departure, she'd exit the house, walk the short path across the front yard, and climb the 5 or 6 steps into the carport. And then she'd walk around the car looking at the tires. Then she'd get in and she'd start the car. Then she'd get out, and she would leave it idling to warm up, she'd say. And then she'd go back into the house to prepare herself for the drive. 20 minutes later, with coat and gloves on and a bonnet covering her hair from the rain, she would return and climb into the cockpit. And then she'd adjust all the mirrors and restack the phone books and check the blinkers. And then she'd get out of the car and walk out the back of that carport and up that steep incline to the gap in the junipers. And she would slowly and cautiously lean forward and put her head out to see whether there was any traffic. There never was. So then she'd walk back down that incline and get in the car, pulling that bench seat up as close to the steering wheel as she could possibly get it to go. Even then, she had to stretch out to push the brake and to see over the dashboard at the same time. And then, only then, with many stops and starts, she would back out of that carport and up that incline. But anyhow, so there we were, finally, at Grandmother's house. And Dad drove our Mustang down that incline and parked it right behind Grandmother's car. We got out. You really had to squeeze, even as a little kid, to get out of the back seat of that car. But finally we were out, and there we were, standing by the carport. So we squeezed past Grandmother's car, and we walked down those steps and up the path to her front door. My grandfather had built the house. No. He hadn't done the contracting for the house. He had built it, every stinking part of it, even down to the moldings and cabinets in the kitchen. And Grandmother had landscaped the property around it. It was a two-story house, one of those ones with a daylight basement, the sort of house you build into a hill to let you look out at the view and not at the hill behind you. And both levels had huge windows that stretched from one end of the house down to the other, and for good reason. The view of the lake, Lake Washington, and the mountains in the distance was spectacular. Grandmother's landscaping was noteworthy in its own right. She had created 3 grassy terraces and had filled the banks with azaleas and rhododendrons and cherry trees, and she ringed it all in with junipers and hedges that, for little kids like me, created mazes leading back and forth between the neighbors' equally beautifully manicured yards. And a quick knock on the door, and we were inside. Free to play, free to explore, free to stay up late and watch the late movie with Grandmother. Just don't tell your mom and dad, she'd say. And Mom and Dad would say goodbye and the sleepover would start. It was during one of those visits that I woke up my grandmother and I complained I had a stomach ache. She listened to me and then she led me into the kitchen and had me sit down at the table. And she went to the cabinet and she took out a bowl and she poured a little brown sugar into it. Then she took it to the refrigerator and she poured a few drops of milk into the bowl and stuck a small dab of butter on the side. And then she reached into a drawer and pulled out a spoon with which she stirred up this concoction. Here, she said, eat a little of this, she said, handing me the bowl. This is something my parents would give me in the old country when I had a stomach ache. Now, the idea of my ancient grandmother being a child with parents is still impossible to fathom. But anyhow, the old country, I asked. This wasn't something my parents talked about. Scotland, she said, where your grandfather and I grew up. And as I took that first little taste, I noticed that it tasted good, but the gritty, milky consistency on the spoon was a little bit weird. What was it like? I asked. Oh, like this, maybe, she said, as she sat down across from me. No, it was different. Most folks in those days weren't using cars, and of course, you know, I was only 14 when I came here, so it was a long, long time ago. Did you come alone? I asked. Oh, no. I came with your Uncle Jimmy and his best friend Phil. They were 17 at the time, and she got a bit of a twinkle in her eye, and of course, you know, Phil, he was your grandfather. I spooned another bite of that sugar into my mouth. Once you got used to the consistency, it tasted pretty good, sort of like candy. And I looked around at the cabinets and the molding and all that. Mom and Dad said he made all this stuff, I said. But where is he? Where is grandfather? In heaven, she said. He is in heaven. Well, how'd he get there? I asked. He died, she said. And that's so very sad. You would have liked him. I looked around the house again. He must have been really smart. Gone to school a long time to build all this, I said. Well, she answered, he was smart, but he didn't get to spend long in school. That pretty much ended for us when we came over here. Wow, I said. What grade were you in? I had just finished the 8th grade. At this point, my memory fades away. I'm guessing I ate a little more sugar and then pushed the bowl away and said I was done and ready to go back to bed. Probably, I don't know, but, you know, that's how memories are. But the memory of my grandmother remains strong. A woman who was widowed in her early 50s and outlived her husband by 40 years. who learned to drive in her 50s and went to work for the first time in her late 50s, who only finished 8th grade, who never wrote books or invented anything or won any great awards. She did have something, however, that was noteworthy. She had a faith in God that was total and unwavering. It was unlike the faith of anyone I have ever known. It was absolute and childlike. She believed in Jesus the way any rational person believes in the sun or the moon. His existence and his resurrection never, for her, required debate or even discussion beyond the worship that was appropriate. These were a given, a certainty, as real and absolute for her as gravity and cause and effect are for most people. When grandmother said, "Grandfather is in heaven," she didn't say it in a way that was meant to silence the troublesome question of a child. She said it as a simple statement of fact, just as she would say her cousins lived in Scotland. He wasn't here, but he was there. With this sort of faith came a unique ability to present herself as she really was. Grandmother never tried to present herself as a person of great import. To the contrary, she owned her humble origins, and she was simply grateful for what God had given her. You know, we'd walk through those gardens, and she would tell me how God had helped my grandfather find work when he arrived in the States, how they had chosen this property for its view, and how the Lord had permitted them to realize their dreams. And then we'd stand there and look out at that lake and at the fir trees and the mountains beyond. You know, I don't remember Grandmother talking about praying. I know she did, but she didn't talk about it as if it were some sort of unusual activity. No, I think for her, praying was just simply talking to her Savior and to her friend. And no matter what happened in life, my grandmother would always tell me, "It will all work out for the best." That's faith. Overall, my memory of my grandmother is of a woman who was joyful and content because she knew God and she knew herself. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus speaks about people like my grandmother. He calls them the meek. These are folks who have already recognized and owned their spiritual poverty, who recognize that they have no righteousness in themselves, and who have mourned their sinful nature. These are the people who have come to a place of simple trust, recognizing and praising God for His absolute holy sovereignty, those who have come to accurate assessments of themselves and all their strengths and all their weaknesses. They aren't trying to make themselves appear taller or richer or smarter. They are simply trusting God and resting contentedly in His abundant provision. So Jesus speaks of these people, the meek, and He says, "Happy or blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth." Oddly enough, standing next to Grandmother on those sunny afternoons, seeing the lake and the mountains, smelling the flowers around us, I think she had already almost inherited the earth. As she trusted God implicitly and strove to live a simple, good life before Him through Jesus Christ, He had given her the desires of her heart. Grandmother is with the Lord now, in heaven, with my grandfather. Things are now better for them, and things will only continue to improve for them. But if she were here today, during this COVID-19 pandemic, I know what she would do. She'd stretch out her hand and she would pat the back of my hand and say, "It's okay. It will all work out for the best." This faith, this trust, is not reserved for just a few fortunate saints. I believe it is to be the normal experience of every Christian, of you and of me. Because He lives, because Jesus is risen, we do know that everything will work out for the best. We can, we should approach every hardship, every crisis with godly contentment, praising Him for His goodness and His sovereignty, acknowledging and owning our own lowly station, and trusting Him fully. We can. We should trust Him because we know the best is yet to come. God bless.